Hey everybody, and welcome back to Saving Our Speech, exploring the laws of Lashon Hara as they apply to today's day and age. It's a propitious night. I can still say it. Tonight will be Lag BaOmer. It's not Shkia yet, so I didn't fulfill my obligation. So I thought tonight I want to talk about the prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara as it relates to today's day and age specifically, and I think it's quite a challenge in today's day and age. And also, I'd like to tie it in a bit to Lag BaOmer. So, not much to cover in just a couple in this 20 minutes. So let's do it. Let's begin by saying this: there is a prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara. There is such a prohibition. We derive this prohibition from, how you doing, Alan? Take a seat. We derive the prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara from the Gemara Erechin, derives it from the Pasuk, Lo Tisa Shema Shav. You shall not bear a hearing or news which is Shav. Its truth is, the word Shav itself is an interesting one. But before we get to the translation of that, I'd like to ask you what might it mean? Let me ask you. So if there's a prohibition against, quote unquote, accepting Lashon Hara, hearing Lashon Hara, it's a problem with it. What's the problem? What are you to do about it? Meaning, if someone begins to talk to you, how are you to know what they're going to say? Unless you can read minds. Anyone here read minds? Unless you can read minds, how are you to know that what they're about to say is Lashon Hara, right? So I can understand that there's a prohibition against sharing Lashon Hara. You choose what you want to say and what you don't want to say. However, if there's a prohibition against receiving Lashon Hara, which there is, and in fact, the Rambam writes that not only is there a prohibition of hearing Lashon Hara or accepting Lashon Hara, it's even more stringent, more of a severe violation than the speaking of Lashon Hara. But what are we to do about it? So this begs the question of what exactly is the prohibition? What does one have to do to avoid it? How does one violate it? And what do you think the answer to that question is? What would be what could be the prohibition? Or how would you say, how would you frame the prohibition such that it's possible to avoid? Or it's instructive in the way that we should behave.
How is it worded in Hebrew? What's the Hebrew word?
Lo tisa shema shav is a derivation.
Okay, so the pasuk.
So the lo tisa means to bear, and to carry. The Gemara actually has a way of interpreting that word, and it kind of switches the word around to say, instead of lo tisa, lo tasi, which means you shouldn't be the bearer, as opposed to this was the cause of the information, and you shouldn't be the recipient of it. The word shav is also an interesting word. Rabbi Feldman points out in a sefer, sometimes shav is translated as false. Sometimes it's translated as useless. You shouldn't hear useless information or bear useless information. So there are different ways of approaching this. But the most basic point is that it isn't necessarily about hearing the words per se. It's about how you react to them and what you do with them. Okay? And it becomes instructive in that there is another prohibition derived from this, and that is against hearing testimony when it's useless. So the Gemara says, a judge in most cases shouldn't hear testimony if there's only one witness. Why? How many witnesses do you need?
That brings to 82.
You don't need two witnesses.
But the judge can control what witnesses.
Okay, that's true. Exactly the point. He can't even control what the witnesses say. But if there's one witness coming up to you and saying, so-and-so did this, what are you going to do that information?
It's not admissible to court.
Nothing. There's nothing you can do with it. So it's useless. It's at this point useless information. It might be true, but it's useless. So in that sense, that's instructive. So on a very basic level, the prohibition involves not necessarily hearing the words per se, but how you think about them. So one very common way of thinking about this, and this is where the Chafetz Chaim, the way he approaches it, is that you shouldn't assume everything you hear to be true. I.e., someone says, oh my gosh, you know so-and-so, and it might even be useful or necessary information, because you know so-and-so is ripping everybody off with they're selling this product, whatever it is, you know, I don't know. This is an electronic store. He's selling you that phone. The phone doesn't work at all. It's fake. I'm telling you, don't buy it, okay? That might be useful information. It might be. It might not be. It might be totally false. You don't know. There's no way of knowing. And on some level, the prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara means not accepting it as true. Now, that could be very challenging, and you sometimes have to really strike a very delicate balance. Because, for instance, even in the case I just mentioned, sometimes you might have to act upon the information, and the Chafetz Chaim says, at the same time, conclude internally that you're not sure if it's true.
But what happens, don't you have to have faith in the person who's saying it? For example, you said about the phone not working. If you go into a store and it's a salesman and he's selling them and he's supposed to be an expert on phones, why can't you believe it?
Well, if it's negative information, it's not that you can't have to say it's not true, but if it's negative information about another person, you just don't know whether it's true or not.
You said you were referring to a phone.
I understand. I'm just saying that you can't necessarily, why can't you believe it? The truth is because why, there's no way of knowing it's true.
And, unless you rely on the person.
Right. So if it's negative information about another person specifically, then what the Chafetz Chaim is saying is you must, if necessary, you can suspect that it's true and act accordingly, but you can't assume it's true and you can't conclude it's true. And why? That relates to what we're talking about, because people often have biased opinions. People jump to conclusions. Unless you see something with your own eyes, there's no reason that you can't conclude it's true. It might be true. It might not be, right? So on a very basic level, listening to, if you hear something that displays someone in a negative light, I just want to give me a few minutes. I'll take a few questions. If you hear someone displays something in a negative light, the prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara does not mean that you have to regard it as false, but it does mean that you can't assume it's true. Now, there's another step to this, right? And this is it seems very basic, but it's worth saying. What if it is true? Okay. Let's say you heard something negative about someone and you do think it's true. There's reason to suspect it's true. There's another element to this, and that is, even if it is true, how does it reflect the way that you look at the person generally, right? Sometimes information might be true, but it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. You might be picking up a certain detail. Somebody goes to you and say, you know what? I think so-and-so is really struggling with religion, whatever it is. I saw him drive on Shabbos. Got into the car and drove on Shabbos, right? This is like a classic thing. So on the one hand, you might say, well, you know what? This is a very reliable person, not somebody whose word I take lightly. You know, maybe if there's something I could do to help this person out, I should go talk to them. On the flip side, there might be information that you're missing. It could be that they drove because they were taking someone to the hospital or who knows what. So you can't let even if it is true, you can't let say, you know what, that guy, he's no good. He's a Russia. He's a Shabbos violator, whatever it is. So beyond whether doubting the accuracy of the report, there's a question of what you conclude about the person based on the report, right? So that's another impact of this. Now there is another pointer to be emphasized, and that speaks to why it's more strict. Now Rabbi Feldman points out there are many studies that suggest that, believe it or not, when somebody is sharing information to a listener, you have a speaker and a listener, it's often the listener that has the more extreme conclusion based on the report. Because the person speaking knows where the information came from. They know their angle. They know their agenda. Yeah. But the person listening doesn't always know. And when somebody tells you something in a very convincing or charismatic way, the impact it might have on you, right, can be very strong. And so part of this is also just recognizing, you know, our own biases and realizing that, like, I might have heard that, but maybe I should think for a second and to determine whether or not, you know, there might be more to the story and whether or not I'm jumping to conclusions and painting somebody a certain light just because of the way it was told to me. So there is another question that's worth raising, and there's a lot to say about this. There's another question that's worth raising. We talk about the prohibition against accepting the Lashon Hara, and that is the question of what internally versus externally. So there are those who suggest that to expect someone to not believe is true might be too much, meaning maybe we can't necessarily control always what we believe. But part of accepting Lashon Hara determines not how you think about it, but what you do about it, right? So to accept Lashon Hara also might be specifically geared toward your actions, your reaction, right? Someone told us a few weeks ago, if you hear something about someone and then you react to that person, you know, I heard what you did to that guy and whatever, or, you know, you don't have a relationship with them based on that, rather than simply wondering, okay, this is something to think about, let me look it up. So that might be a prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara. Accepting that means not just accepting that it's true in your mind, but saying, okay, it's true, and therefore I'm going to do X. Therefore, I'm not going to get into the partnership with X. Therefore, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to avoid the kiddush and shul, right? So it might be more behavior focused. So this is all assuming that it's not about listening per se. Meaning the listening, look, what are you going to do? Someone starts talking to you. You can't control, you don't know, and it's more important. There are times you have to listen. It's important to listen to people. There are times you have to hear what they say that you can be helpful to them. But the question is how you react to it, how it reflects your perspective on the person, what you do about it. That is sort of what the prohibition against accepting Lashon Hara is geared towards. There is a discussion about listening per se. There might be occasions in which we ought to avoid listening, right? So there are certain gatherings, you know, where, I don't know, maybe it's everybody sort of sitting on the stoop and having a beer and whatever. And, you know, when that happens, then, you know, that's when the gossip starts to flow. And that's when Lashon Hara is often said. So there might be certain people that, you know, are predisposed to constantly talking about others. So there are situations, the Chavetz Chaim does suggest that it's possible listening per se, even without reacting, could be prohibited if you know, if there's a reason to assume it likely that the information that will be shared will be negative and useless. And useless is the other point here, because even if it's true, or even if it's not necessarily negative, gossip per se is not always productive. And if it's not productive and you're just talking about someone, I just wanted to tell you about this, about so-and-so, the way that gets transmitted to others often might ultimately be damaging, even if there's nothing negative meant by it. So avoiding, I guess, gossip fests or those sort of circumstances in which useless, not useful, not productive information about other people is just flowing to and for, you know, back and forth, is also something to keep in mind. Now, all of this was always true for hundreds of years. This is not a new problem. But I do think, as Rabbi Feldman also points out, it's really been exacerbated in today's day and age for many, many reasons, right? We have a very prominent journalism industry. There's all sorts of newspapers and all sorts of periodicals that go out. And what they do primarily is share news about other people. And often it's not so positive. Now, Rabbi Feldman points out that doesn't mean it's not necessary, that a strong, you know, journalistic enterprise is important for informing the people, for making sure that if something wrong is done, that people know about it, can be corrected. In fact, there is a certain there are authorities that allow, for instance, reading newspapers in today's day and age on Shabbos, even though there was a prohibition associated with that. But because of the importance of learning information that might be relevant and that might be pertinent, so there are a lot of authorities that do acknowledge that importance. And the Chazon Ish writes that specifically public public figures or leaders of the community, it's important that when they act or do something that people know about it and know why they do it because of the role that they play and the impact that they might have, such information is pertinent. So it's not to say that there's no place for journalism or sharing public information. That being said, just because something is written in a newspaper doesn't mean that it's true. That sounds very basic, but it's not always so basic. So now you might say, well, that's not the spoken word and it doesn't really matter. Meaning there's an interesting discussion to be had about when the spoken word is equivalent to the written word, but Lashon Hara is more about the product, the outcome of sharing information. It doesn't really matter about the means that you do share that information, whether you write it, whether you write it on a phone or email it, the impact that it has is the issue. So as consumers of journalism, it's just essential to keep this prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara in mind. Number one, again, and particularly in this case, and Rabbi Feldman points out that there is the additional challenge is that at least when someone's talking to you, there's a human to human interaction. But what's written, you lack that. You lack that face-to-face interaction. And that often really changes things. You don't have to deal with a person. It makes the communication much less personal. And also, there are certain things that we wouldn't say to another person that we're very comfortable maybe writing or sharing, particularly when it's anonymous, which is not often in journalism, but in other areas I want to get to. Social media, exactly. But the journalistic enterprise, and so it just, these are very basic things that we probably recognize, but we, you know, particularly in today's day and age, a polarized environment, you know, journalists often have an agenda and they're trying more than necessarily to spread the truth and spread relevant information. They're often trying to cater to a certain worldview. They're trying to, you know, print the news that's not just fit to print, but that will sell and that will increase the ratings. And just because, and you have to keep that in mind when you digest that information, that just because it's written doesn't mean it's necessarily true. Or even if it is true, it might be colored in a certain way. It might be written in a certain way to convey a certain type of message and to elicit a certain response and elicit outrage and things of that nature. And our responsibility as consumers of information is to see through that and to think, okay, what is actually true? What do I need to know? And what response is this intended to elicit from me? And is it an appropriate response? Or is it just, you know, to get me riled up unnecessarily? Speaking of social media, I think it's particularly relevant. And I just want to highlight something that Rabbi Feldman points out. So there is a discussion, fascinating, in the Gemara about what happens when there's public information. And also, there is the Tfali Toso suggests the following, that at least in times of the Gemara, if you say something that you know is going to get out to lots of people, there was an assumption that you'd be more careful about it. There was such an assumption, right? There's this basic, there's idea in the Gemara that if you're saying something in front of three people, that will spread. And since it will spread, it will get to the person who is the subject matter. And therefore, if it's something that, you know, could be phrased in a way which is damaging to that person's reputation, or could be phrased in a way which isn't necessarily damaging to that person's reputation, because you know it will ultimately get to the person, you'll be careful about it, right? So there's an assumption in those days, according to Tosos at least, that information that spreads to many people, the person who shares that information will likely be more careful. And it's evident and clear that that is just no longer true, right? And I think social media proves the exact opposite, that people are specifically intend to, you know, the social media and is geared toward trying to get as much of a reaction, as much promotion of what you share as possible. And people are specifically incentivized to say the most outrageous or extreme formulation such that they will elicit a response. And it's very clear that the fact that the person's going to hear about it seems to have almost no impact on many people. right? They're not embarrassed at all. It doesn't at all cause them to be a bit more careful about what they say. It seems like it's the opposite. They want the guy to hear about it. So all that being said, it is particularly tenuous to know how to digest information from social media or those sorts of things. Like, clearly it's often polarized. People are specifically trying to, and, you know, they're looking for a certain perspective rather than just digesting information. And so that doesn't mean that everything we hear on social media or see on social media is not true, but it's clearly putting a specific angle on a person that you have to keep in mind. Like, just because this is a clip of a certain, for instance, something that the person said, well, what was the greater context of it? Why did they say that? Why are they riled up? What happened beforehand? You don't know. And to then conclude, well, that in that clip, that person looked really outrageous. They must be a bad person. Very well could fall into this trap of accepting Lashon Hara, right? And so we're all prone to this. We have to acknowledge it. We're all sort of in this world, in this sort of environment where quote unquote information is shared so rapidly and often not corrected so rapidly. And often it's not true. And even if it is true, often it's with an angle and often it's with an agenda, and it impacts us and it gets us angry and it gets us upset. And that is the exact opposite of the culture that this prohibition of accepting Lashon Hara is intended to promote. Okay, I'll pause a little bit for people's observations. Yeah, pause, something to say.
Well, when you finish your point,
go for it.
Okay. I have 2 points I want to make.
Okay.
One is, I have a problem with what you were saying before, because you have to identify the person who's making the statement or is giving you the information.
Right.
I'll give you for example. You go into your GP as a doctor, and you say to your doctor, you need a hip transplant. You heard that Dr. X was very good doing hip transplants, and your GP says, no, he's very bad. He's had bad history of screwed up operations. I'm relying on my GP on the basis of his information and his experience, and I'm going to believe what he says.
That's fair. I know objection to that. No, it's not, because so that relates to our previous classes. Number one, that's for a productive purpose. He's trying to instruct you as to how to get a good hip transplant. Number two, not saying you have to say it's not true, but maybe in that case, it's a good example. You might say, well, I'm not going to go to this person per se, but I might do more research. I might ask a second opinion. Or you might say, even if I do think it's true, but I'm not going to let it meet, you know, he's probably trying his best. He's probably not trying to do a bad job of hip replacements. This is like his job, you know, like he probably thinks he's doing a good job. Maybe, you know, maybe they had different methodologies or approaches, and my doctor just thinks, there's always different ways of interpreting results, right? There's always different ways. Like, he thinks he always did a bad job, but maybe the other doctor would have a good explanation as to why he does what he does and the way he does it. So what I'm saying is not to say you don't believe your GP, but, you know, but more to say that, you know, try not to let it totally color the way you look at that doctor. Now, you might still go to a different doctor, and that's fair, but it's good to do your research, number one. And number two, not to think like that guy must be an awful person. And he's like, you know, like, I don't even know why he's in medicine. That's what I would say.
The second point I want to make is that if you do enough research, you will find out that certain sources of information, especially in social media, have biases.
100%.
You can pick up an anti-Semitic Toronto Star. And you say, I'm not going to read the Star because they have a history of anti-Semitism, and I don't believe anything their editorial say.
Okay.
You can pick up the Post and say they're pro-Israel, so I'm going to give more credence to the editorial comments that I'm going to read there.
Okay.
Whether it's written, whatever. So you can do research and find out what every news organization has a bias.
100%.
No one doesn't have a bias.
100%.
So you know that. When you do your research, you can interpret the information they give you in a much clearer light.
My point is you have to do that. That's what I'm trying to say. My point is you have to do that. My point is you have to know and do as best as you can, know the angle they're coming from, and therefore understand that's going to color the way they present information. I'm not saying you can't read it. I'm just saying that you can't. That gets back to the accepting Lashon Hara. It doesn't mean you can't read it. It means that it governs the way that you react to it. That's what I'm trying to say. But I agree with you 100%. Stephen, do you want to say something from before?
Yeah, Rabbi, just on that term, since we don't really know what anybody's reporting is true or not, should we also take positive news about someone with some level of suspicion?
No. No.
Look, I don't, what, from a truth perspective, maybe, I don't think that would fall under the category of Lashon Hara per se. But that being said, it's worth noting that this prohibition of accepting is also might be related to the general injunction against, you know, falsehood, meaning we say Midvar Sheker Tirchak, you should distance yourself from falsehood. And it says distance yourself from it, which might connote more than just saying something that's false, but also not participating in the spreading of falsehood. So in that sense, you know, in terms of doing your research about what's true, it's important to not necessarily to realize, well, they may be exaggerating, you know. That being said, I don't think it's as injurious as believing a negative report about someone. I don't think it's quite as dangerous, but I hear your point. Okay. So I want to now get to the Lag BaOmer part of our shiur. I think I can still say Lag BaOmer because it's not yet Shkia. I wanted to relate this on a bit of a deeper level to the story that we often associate with Lag BaOmer. So Lag BaOmer is traditionally understood as the day in which Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away. And one of the most famous stories of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai actually very much relates to what we've been talking about. Why do I say that? Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai runs away to a cave. Why do you run away to a cave? Okay. So first of all, the context of the story, it's actually, believe it or not, very interesting. It's on page 33b in Masechet Shabbat, which is log is obviously 33. Now, I don't think the person who paged the Gemara had that in mind, but look, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Anyways, so first it talks about the following. It says, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yilai was called Rosh HaMedabrin. Rosh HaMedabrin means the person who always speaks first. Now, why was he called that? Why? So the Gemara relates the following story. The Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Yilai, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon were sitting. And this other fellow, Yehuda ben Gerim, was sitting with them. Rabbi Yehuda opened up and he said the following, okay? Kama na'im ma'asein shel umazu. He was talking about the Romans, Rabbi Yehuda, son of Rabbi Yilai, and he said, look how wonderful this nation is, the Romans. He was, you know, extolling them for all the wonderful things they did. He said, Tiknu shvakim, they put together all these markets, Tiknu Gesharim, they built these bridges, Tiknu Merchatzot, they built these bathhouses. Look at their infrastructure, look at the cities they built, the communities. Wow, incredible what the Romans have done. Okay. Rabbi Yossi Shatak, Yossi said nothing. Then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Vamar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai answered and said, Kol ma shetiknu lo tiknu lo tzarech atzman. All the things the Romans built, they built it for themselves. Tiknu shuki and lahoshe ben zono. They made these markets. Why? Because they wanted to put prostitutes in the markets. Okay. Merchatzo la'ad ben atzman. They made these bathhouses. They wanted to, have all sorts of pleasure and engage themselves in all sorts of unnecessary vanities. Okay. Gesharim litol behen mechas. They made the bridges so they can take taxes. They collect taxes on the bridges. Okay. Halach Yehuda ben Gerim. B'sipra divrayim. Yehuda ben Gerim heard this conversation between these rabbis about the Romans, and he spread the news about the conversation. V'nishma'u l'malchus, and it was this conversation went to the kingdom. And then they said, Amru Yehuda sheyala yisala. Yehuda, reputed by Rabbi Yilai, who said the nice things about the Romans, we're gonna take care of him. He's gonna be raised up, i.e., he'll have like a noble position. Yehuda ben Gerim. Yosi Shesatak Yigala Tzipori. We're going to exile Yosi or Yosi to Tzipori somewhere else. Shimon Shagino Yiharek, but Shimon, who denigrated the kingdom, he's going to get killed. Right? So the word gets to the kingdom, and Shimon has to run away. And that's when he runs to the cave ultimately, and you know the story about the cave. Now, it's actually interesting about the story about the cave. Maybe I'll get to that in a minute. So what is the cause? What is the cause of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's troubles? What's the cause? Whose cause was it? Who made this happen? So you could say it's the guy who spread the Lashon Hara. right? It's the guy who slandered him. It's the person who went around saying, "Did you know what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said about the Romans? Ah, he said that they only do all this good stuff for themselves, for all these very selfish motives." And that's what got him in trouble, right? But it's interesting. What is the context of the Gemara? What does it explain? It's explaining why Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elai is called Rosh HaMedabrit, right? Rabbi Yehuda said something ostensibly innocent. The Romans are really great. And that sort of elicited this reaction. Now, did Rabbi Yehuda intend to do any wrong? Of course not. But it is interesting. There is something called Avak Lashonara. Avak Lashonara means that if you're going to praise someone, you have to be wary of the reactions, right? So if I would say in front of Paul, "Hey, that doctor, he's such a great doctor," you know, and Paul then says, "No, he's not. He can't do a hip replacement," right? Okay, so I have to sort of think, well, will this statement elicit negative reactions? Which is a very challenging thing to do. So what I think you see here is the care that one has to have with sharing certain information and knowing what to say and when what not to say and how to say it. Now, I want to go a little bit deeper here. It's interesting. What about what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said? You know, did he? So on the one hand, he did say something that denigrates the Romans. But the Romans, so what was the problem with Yehuda ben Gerit? Like he reported the truth. He said what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai actually said. It's true. The thing is that the Romans clearly, what point is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai trying to make here, right? Well, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is very, very focused on essentially seeing through the vanity in this world, seeing through the physical reality and focusing on the spiritual. So he's saying, look, they built all these big buildings, but that's not the ultimate truth. And it doesn't really matter only why you built, what you build, but why you built it and what's your ultimate goal. And we said that in a very denigrating way about the Roman government, which maybe wasn't necessarily the wisest thing to do, but there is a truth there. But the Roman government wouldn't know that, and they don't really care about it. So it's not that the point isn't that just that he shouldn't have said that about Rav Shimon. The point is that you have to anticipate that if you're going to share information, who are you sharing it with? And are they going to understand what you're sharing? And they're going to understand the context of it and the depth of it and the purpose of it. And that not all information needs to be shared at all times. Not even all Torah needs to be shared at all times. There might be certain parts of Torah that certain people aren't ready for. They're going to misunderstand and misconstrue it, come to certain conclusions that they're not ready for. That's part of the secrets of Torah that we talk about are not necessarily for everyone. And even Rav Shimon Bar Yochai himself, the story ends, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is in this cave. It doesn't end there, but then part of the story is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is in this cave. And he walks out and he sees these people like farming, etc., plowing. He gets all angry at them. What are you wasting your time in this world, etc., busy with all these physical entities? You have to learn Torah. And he burns them alive. That's what the story says. And Hashem says, go back into your cave. Why did you leave your cave? Did you come here to destroy my world? Now, is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wrong? On a certain level, no. On a certain level, yes. People are different. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was totally focused on the spiritual. But it was upon him to go back into the cave and realize that other people have different emphases, right? So part of the point is, I sort of want to close with this. Part of the importance of Lashon Hara and staying away from it is, number one, is the search for truth, but realizing that truth doesn't just mean what's factual and what's not factual. And in a certain sense, it might, but sometimes more important than that is the question of, is it time? How should I reveal the following? And how is it going to come across to the person I'm sharing it with? How will it affect them? How will it affect that perspective? How will it impact them? And how can I make sure to share what I need to in a way which will produce the result that I'm looking for, right? And that's appropriate. So sharing something true about someone might be factual, but if it paints them in a totally negative light and it paints a caricature of them and focuses on certain elements of their personality to exclusion of the positive elements, it might be factual, but someone seeking the ultimate truth shouldn't participate in such sharing of information or listening to it. And it's not just lashon hara, but it's all informations like that. All informations like that, the way that we share Torah, the way that we tell stories, we have to keep in mind that just because something is true or even something that we feel passionate about, there's a certain way of sharing it. There's a certain focus on what is ultimately the goal of my sharing this. And that I think is something that is particularly challenging in today's day and age with so much information, false information, even true information that goes around. But it's also something that we all ought to try better to be in terms of making sure that we use our words in a way that only makes people better and improves the community around us, never the opposite. Okay, that's my spiel for today.
That's what you're saying. You got to tell the
story. Thank you.
Part of the story, true. But at least
exactly. Exactly.
I have a show.
Yeah. One second. I'll take yours in a second. Al, Steve, you have a question? Because I need to end the meeting to end the recording, I think.
Yeah, just a comment, Rabbi. I can tell you another time. It's okay.
All right, no worries. Okay. Bye, Ruth. Thanks for listening. Bye, Stephen. I'll see you later.